Welcome to part three of the J-Stock story. And in this part, Jay is actually going to speak about some of the images on his website, www.jstock.com.
I've chosen three different images. And the story about the images, number one, is in a portfolio series about ballet. Since almost all of my images have a story as to why they were taken, exposed, and printed, the image I'd like to talk about is close-up of the feet of a dancer.
You'll find this image in Gallery 1 on jstock.com, and it's the image called The Dedicated Dancer.
The right foot was a complete foot in the ballet shoe, and the other foot was exposed outside the shoe. In my many years of photographing the dance, the dancers I found to be the people who chose to participate in a dance program, whether it's offered all over, would be of all ages. This program is one of a strong dedication and commitment to those people, which required a tremendous amount of hard work and dedication to it. It was always a treat to see the tiny little ladies with their little tutus trying desperately to try to be as graceful as they possibly can. A different set of higher values took over. It was such a wonderful, unusual time for me to see people from the beginning of their professional careers in dancing. And this meant that this image that I'm talking about really makes a statement about the ballet dancer. The complete body language is tied into this feat of this ballerina. This particular image makes a great statement of what a ballerina must suffer through as she suffer with her feet desperately because it hurts as she continues to grow. It's really shown in this silver gelatin of display of shoes and feet and toes. But really the tradition, the trademark of them, both are really shown in the tradition of the ballerina who never really is given the credit for the suffering and pain. I admire them immensely. This portrait is a timeless image. My second image is printed in gallery number 3. And gallery number 2, I'm sorry. It's an image of Monument Valley in Utah, 20 miles from the Arizona border. It would have known, Monument Valley is known worldwide for its majesty, the beautiful rock formations. To me, it's a magic, and it's beautiful. It's breathtaking. I first saw Monument Valley over 50 years ago. It's also the home of many Navajo Indians that still live there. My many views of the valley is that it's a desert, and it's usually cloudless. I have spent many, many days over the years photographing this valley and the Navajos who lived there. I remember one winter I received a phone call from a Navajo friend that the valley was covered with snow. I was on the next plane out of Pittsburgh to fly to the area to photograph this desert land with snow on the trees, and the trees were petrified and all covered with snow. It was beautiful. I've been to the valley at daybreak and at sunset, in the snow and in the rain and in the hail. And each time different, I get different perspectives, takes place as it also with the people that live there. My friendship with the Navajos that are there and close-knit, they are horse trainers, they are rug makers, they are jewelry artists, they are medicine men, they sheep haters, they're sheep hair herders, among other. I have the opportunity to make images of them, and I have had in their hogans, the areas around them, and I I have a lady whose name is Susie. And Susie fries me Indian bread every time I fly, I go into Monument Valley. I did a portfolio of her dad, John Cly, who lives in Monument Valley. That was presented to part of the government in Washington, D.C. in 1972 or 75. In fact, she makes me Indian. I asked her one day for a recipe, and Susie Mae said, I'll send it to you. So one day I got a rug in the mail, and the recipe was woven into rug. It's very rare that the valley is so full of so many beautiful people. It's full of sand dunes, water holes, great formations with ancient cliff dwellings, and hieroglyphics scrawled into the rocks. Each day is magic. Sunrise and sunsets are spectacular. In fact, I spent hours photographing it from a plane, a rare sight. All sorts of brush and trees, wild plants. I had taken many workshops into the valley, and thus the image on the website was as a result of this rare view of the valley. We camped in one night, and during the night, a rare storm came up, and it got colder, and it seems to rain, and we had developed a strong hailstorm, so much so that during the night, the hail took down many of the sleeping tents, and we had to scramble to get into vehicles, into drier areas. When daylight came, this spectacular view lay before me. The ground was covered with white hail. The sky and clouds were filled with cumulus clouds. This was indeed a rare sight, a sight that was rarely seen and photographed, so I am blessed to have it. I've been able to visit this beautiful place for so many years and so many seasons to have become friends and with the people that live there. This is truly one of God's examples of paradise, to be viewed and seen with respect. It's only a place of beauty that Navajos call home, and it's magical, and it's magical, and it's heaven. My third number print that I'm going to talk about is in gallery number 3. And it's a print, it's what I guess the title of it is Time for Prayer. It's a quiet and restful portrait of Mrs. Zechler, who is the epitome of solitude and quiet time, and a wonderful image of a grandmother. This image is especially precious to me because when I was a little boy, I played with her grandchildren. And this lovely grandmother made homemade bread and give us some of that bread coated with fresh churned butter and with homemade jelly. This has stayed with me all of my life. And when I opened my studio in 1940s, I asked her if she would come to my sit for me so I could create a portrait of her. I know her to be a spiritual person, a kind of gentle soul. I also remembered her in my ways, in my childhood, and that she was where she had no electricity, and the homes at that time were lit by kerosene lamps. Her face was so lovely with the lines of life. Her white hair was signified of her to me. The white clothing just added to the simplicity of this timeless image. This studio portrait was life in itself, and was made with speed lights using about 25 watt seconds of light and controlled by barn doors in such a way as to allow the image to look as if it was being lit by the lamp in itself. And when the lamp was only a prop instead of a lighting source. Her clothing was in Bible and her hand resting on the cane only added to how simply it was to create this super image. The low-key lighting and the printing on a high sulfur paper makes use of the silver gelatin image and applies it in a category of a vintage collectible print. The timeless sample storytelling portrait is very significant among collectors today, and it was created well over 60 years ago. and as you went to view the image, you faced that the quietness that is reflected in that image. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeremy, you there?
Yeah, I am. I'm just like...
talk louder.
I'm just captivated and totally absorbed in looking
at... Is it okay?
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. When was the dancer, the dedicated dancer...
Can't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. When was the year that you took the photograph of the dancer's feet?
I can't hear you.
Oh, what year did you take the photograph of the dancer's feet?
Of the dancer's feet?
Yes.
Well, probably in about the 1980s.
Okay, and what about that beautiful, majestic monument in Monument Valley?
Yeah, that was done about 50 years ago, so it's got to be done in the 1950.
1950.
Between 1950 and 1960, yes.
And that was with infrared photography, it says on
right,
your website.
Right, that's infrared black and white film, right.
And how did you decide, you know, what whether to use infrared for that or just regular black and white film?
Well, I used both of them. I used infrared and black and white, and I used color also. So I used all three different kinds of film. I just liked the contrast a little bit better because of the infrared quality.
That's absolutely beautiful. It makes me want to go and visit... that incredible part of the world.
Which one?
It makes me want to go and visit the Monument Valley.
Yes.
And with the dancers, was that in your studio or in a dance studio?
The feet?
The feet. Mm-hmm.
It's done in a dance studio, just available light.
Absolutely.
Window light.
Absolutely beautiful. What was the reaction of the dancer when she saw that print?
Well, she was overwhelmed because nobody just ever photographed her feet, especially with one foot out of the ballet shoe.
And did you ask her to take her shoe off, or was that just how she was at that moment?
Well, that was typical that way. That's what they usually do when they're done dancing or working. They usually kick one shoe off and just leave it there. And I told her, just stay there. Let me get this picture.
Wow. It's amazing. And like you say, the feet tell such a story of the work. And in a way, the pain they have to go through to achieve the beauty that we all enjoy when we see ballet.
Well, I think people don't seem to realize all the problems and all the hurt and pain the dancers go through. They go through a lot of trouble to create their dance, and they suffer. They certainly don't make enough money either on what they do.
Mm. And so do you have any projects coming up, things that you're planning ahead that you're looking forward to, that you're working on right now?
Yes, I'm working on a project right now. I'm working on the brother of Andy Warhol. Andy Warhol's brother is 86, had a stroke, and I ran into him about 8 months ago and decided to do a project with him. He's the one that taught Andy Warhol how to paint. And this guy is still painting, but he's painting from a wheelchair. So I spent 2 days with him so far doing some things. And then I'm working on another project with an organization that has handicapped people and people with Down syndrome working for them. And that's another big program that I'm working with, where we can see how these people have jobs. They come to work every day, and they sit there for 4 hours or 5 hours. They give them menial jobs to do, like putting screws in a plastic bag or boxing something. But there's really hundreds of these people where I go and photograph these things. So I made a connection with these people, and they've allowed me up there now 3 different times. And we're going to have probably a book on what they do as a fundraiser, and have a private exhibit when we get through photographing it.
These are
the 2 projects that I'm working on. Continued projects is also with the coal miners of West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I just came back from there 3 months ago. And I'm going to do a whole series on the people of Mexico that I've been there for a number of years.
It's very interesting. I actually just heard the voice of... Can you hear me okay, Jay? Can you hear me? Jay?
Can hear you.
Oh, okay. Jay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'll talk up. I just heard the voice of the brother of Andy Warhol in the exhibition at the De Young Museum in San Francisco. They have his voice narrating some of the exhibition, and very interesting stories about Warhol as a child and what a shy private person he was, and how he wrote to all these film stars and asked for their signatures on photographs.
Yes, yes. It's funny because this guy, this man, his name is Paul. His name is Warhola. And all they did to make Andy Warhol, they eliminated the letter A off the name. And what happened is he taught Andy how to paint.
Very interesting. Yeah. And
so I'm doing a whole story on him and where he painted, but I can't do too much because he's very inactive and he had a stroke and he sits in a wheelchair.
Right. Very, very interesting.
We'll do something.
Oh, that's fantastic. When you do your pictorial stories, are these always series?
You gotta talk louder, Jeremy.
Okay. When you do pictorial studies, is it always a series of images? You're not aiming for one seminal picture, but a series of pictures that capture the character?
Yes. Every photograph that I make, I try to make it a pictorial study. That came because of my teaching from the illustrators in New York City. And by Adolf Papa Fassbender, the German teacher who became a very dear friend of mine, who taught me nothing but pictorialism. And I try to make every one of my portraits that I photograph that I make into a pictorial study where it doesn't just be the person, it makes a big statement. And I can put together portfolios and books and individual pictures that are all storytelling. Now, I just had this show of mine put in Dayton, Ohio, and some of the people came there after the show and said to me, every one of your pictures is timeless, which meant there was a story there. It was like a pictorial study of everything that I did. So that made me feel quite good.
That's wonderful. And I think that's a lesson for us all, the power of storytelling in our images.
Well, you know, what I did of you and Ruth is the same thing. It's a story of you working with her. So it was a story of you painting her on your computer, which I thought you did such a great job of. And it was wonderful to see you and Reed Bernhardt in that one position.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that picture, by the way. It's one of my absolute favorites. Ruth, it has so much beauty and radiant, totally radiant.
Well, it's so great that when you get good people, you know, doing so many great things, it's like the kind of work you do. I admire your work, what you do, because I don't know of anybody else that does it and does it as well as you do. And you're a great artist, and to have you and the famous Ruth Bernhardt together in one picture was exciting.
Oh, it was exciting for me as well. I was interested, Jay.
Talk louder.
Oh, Jay, can you hear me now? Okay. I'm interested to know your thoughts on, you know, this whole revolution of digital technology and tools. Do you still do everything with film, or what's your relationship to digital technology?
I have no problems with digital technology. It's here. We don't even know where it's going to go in the next couple of years. It's here to stay. I think there's a lot of beautiful things happening with it. I find that there's so many different things that can be done with digital camera. I just am not one of the persons who wants to go into this field at my stage in my life. I'm going to stay with film as long as I can. And that doesn't mean that I don't approve of all the great and many things that's happening with digital photography. The thing that I dislike the most is the fact is that those people are just taking regular little old snapshot pictures and not putting composition, not putting good directional light, not using a lot of separations, and they're just making pictures and they think that they're artists and they're photographers.
Right. And when you say separation,
not louder.
When you say separations, you said composition, separations and directional light.
Yeah.
When you say separations, what are you referring to?
Well, I mean separations between, right now there's nothing. Most of the stuff that we see in photography today done with digital cameras is all done with the high key stuff. You look at some of the pictures that are done at weddings as an example. Blonde haired people, white faces, white gowns, there is no separation. It's all one conglomeration of light, period, without any separation at all. That's what I mean about separation. Good lighting gives you separate between highlights and shadows and between light clothes and dark clothes. The systems that are being used today with the digital, most people are using flat softboxes, and they're creating a light source. And it's just the trend also of magazine covers all over the world. So everything is in a higher key, but there is no separation there.
Very interesting. I think we can learn a lot just by looking at your images, because they speak so loudly of that.
Yeah, my images on the complete website is that they're all based on the old masters and the people that I talked to you about, and they're separation, and they're all storytelling, and they're all timeless.
Absolutely. And finally, do you have any advice to give, aspiring photographers, people who are new to image making, anything you'd say, any guiding words of wisdom?
Well, I think young people today have a great opportunity in photography, almost like what I have. I made it a direction from my beginning to take the time to study my craft and to do it properly before I even went into business. Most people today that's getting into digital photography usually have another income. And what they're doing, they're just having some fun with their cameras, and they have a possibility of wanting to go a little bit further, but they're doing what everybody else is doing. And I think in order to succeed in today's world today, we have to make changes. I made changes in my backgrounds. I made changes in my compositions. I made changes in how I sold my photographs. I made changes in how I displayed them, how I showed them, how I communicated with people. And I think young people today have to learn good lighting and good composition, and they got to make their pictures different than anybody else. And I think another thing that's got to happen today with the influx of so many people with digital cameras, that we almost have to go back into the studio to start creating timeless pieces instead of just worry of being done outdoors, and bring that trend back into the general public where more appreciative art will be done. You know, when you make an art piece, it should be hung and displayed in a prominent place in your office or in your home. And most pictures being made today digitally by so many people, I'm not saying everybody, I'm saying so many people, doesn't have all these artistic qualities to them.
Thank you so much, Jay. This has been an incredible story, and I'm so excited to be able to share this on Paintbox Jay.